It's time for the show that scours the globe for news that interests you. We've scoured a few other planets, too. Didn't find much. Coming to you almost live from their command center just beneath the Earth's crust, here's Jeremy Bray and Wesley Faulkner with Global Geek News.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Global Geek News Podcast. This is episode number 72 of the Global Geek News Podcast. As always, I am your host, Jeremy Bray, alongside my co-host, Wesley Faulkner. How's it going, Wesley?
Things are going well. It's been a nice, long three-day weekend, and I'm actually looking forward to the week ahead.
Well, lucky you. You got a three-day weekend. Mine was just a normal weekend.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Well, not terribly normal, because you did have a birthday.
Yeah, but even that still turned into a normal Saturday, just about. But
yeah,
it was. I'm another year older, another year closer to death. Whoop-de-doo. I don't know. I've never been one to put much stock into birthdays or even a whole lot of holidays, for that matter.
Yeah, well, it is an excuse to be a little selfish, though.
Yeah, but it's also an excuse as to where I have to see family that I don't care to see.
Oh. Okay, well then, yes, that could, as long as they bear gifts, at least that lessens the blow a little bit.
Yeah, as long as they bring cash, it's not that big a deal, but if they don't bring cash, then it's like, okay, this day sucked.
Well.
But, anyway, so did you do anything, go to see any big firework shows or anything?
Actually, no. Didn't even look for fireworks. I saw a couple while driving from one place to another, but didn't watch any TV shows that were featuring fireworks or anything like that. Didn't go and seek them out. It's just that it seems like the crowds are more trouble to deal with than is worth it to fight to see fireworks outside. All the good spots are taken, traffic is hectic, and I end up leaving angrier than when I started. So I just enjoyed the time off and celebrated my own little way.
Yeah, I've never been one to go to fireworks shows and stuff. I've always just shot off my own fireworks, and this is the first year that I didn't shoot any off, which kind of a strange feeling, but ended up having to stay inside with the dog because he's deathly afraid of fireworks, which wasn't too bad. Watched a couple of TV shows, worked on one of my netbooks for a little while, and got to watch the movie 21, which is, I don't know how many times I've seen that movie. That's going to be like the fifth time I've seen that movie. I don't know why, but I like that movie.
You gamble at all?
Once in a while, I'll do a little bit of poker, but I've never been a huge blackjack person. Once in a while I'll play a game or two, but usually that's just on little handheld poker game machines that we happen to get every so often.
Okay. Yeah, I used to be huge in the blackjack. Now Texas Hold'em's my game.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I've gone too. But I don't know. I never seem to find a whole lot of people that seem to be into blackjack anymore. It's like everybody's all poker.
Yeah. Poker. It's a new fun game.
Yeah, it's nice every once in a while, but I don't know. Most of the time I probably spend, when I'm playing card games and stuff, it's usually poker, but once in a while I like a good game of blackjack. But anyway, we've got a whole bunch of stories. Well, the usual number of stories, plus several tips of the week, which all of which you can find at globalgeeknews.com. So feel free to follow along with us as we go through our stories, starting with YouTube has apparently been hacked, and it's mainly to target Justin Bieber videos.
Yeah, this is insane because of how easy it was. So basically, hackers put in their comment system a script. and it was being executed just a simple cross-site scripting hole that they took advantage of. I would think that they would be better at this by now, especially with all the web properties that they own, that they would catch something like this, especially since there's so much focus has been on cross-site scripting bugs and holes.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that nobody's managed to even find this before in the hacking community or whatever. Apparently somebody realized, oh, hey, I can put some malformed HTML into the comments and inject my own script in there. And as soon as this was discovered, well, 4chan decided to have a whole lot of fun with it. They kind of flooded all the Justin Bieber videos and made it as to where when you went to watch a video, it would do anything from redirecting them to like a porn site to calling them not so nice names and
right. All. Or saying that Justin Bieber is dead.
Yeah, that was the entertaining one. I don't know. Apparently they redirected some people to One Man, One Jar. I'm not sure I necessarily want to know what that one means.
Yeah, I did not look that up.
Yeah, if that's anything like a Two Girls, One Cup kind of thing, I don't want to know. But at the same time, I'm kind of surprised that I don't know about it. I'd never heard of it, which that kind of surprises me. But yeah, I'm really surprised. Apparently, YouTube had everything fixed within about 2 hours. I guess it took them an hour to realize kind of what was going on and to hide all the comments, and then about 2 hours to come up with at least a temporary fix until they can get something a little bit more permanent done. So
yeah,
I'm guessing there's got to be some other vulnerabilities until, or something else that can be done by hackers until they get like a real permanent fix in there.
Yeah, lucky for me, this was the one day I didn't do a search for Justin Bieber and look at his videos, so I was safe.
I've never seen a Justin Bieber video.
Well, also, surprisingly, they didn't do anything worse. Apparently, all of the reports are just redirects and some videos, but nothing terribly malicious was done.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't expect anything too horribly malicious out of 4chan unless you, like, pissed 4chan off. But, yeah, something like forwarding people to One Man, One Jar, or saying that Justin Bieber's dead, that makes sense coming out of 4chan. But 4chan doesn't usually do too much in the way of something malicious unless you go after them first.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to mess with them. And they can hit the big guys, even Google, so no one's safe. Because they'll find a way if they really, 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 really want to.
Yeah, that's why everybody on the internet knows you don't screw with 4chan. Because that's probably the one group of people that could actually take down the entire internet if they wanted to.
Yeah, I think they're pretty elite users. I mean, these aren't just run-of-the-mill people messing around. These are people probably with full-time jobs inside of Google and inside of Microsoft and inside of Facebook and all the major web properties. They probably know exactly how to hit people because they have a lot of inside information.
Well, I don't remember their exact statistics, because I believe it was came out of the TED conference, because Moot, or that's the name that the guy goes by that founded the site, said that they're the largest bunch of forums on the internet. They get, I don't know how many, like tens of millions of views a month and whatever, and it's kind of impressive if you ever go there and see what they have going on there, but at the same time, it's very not safe for work.
Yeah, definitely don't go there unless you have like also a firewalled browser. You don't want to expose yourself to that website.
Yeah, that's one of the dark corners of the internet that you kind of want to be careful of. I gotta say they are starting to do a little bit better about patrolling some of the stuff that's on there, trying to keep some of the more illegal stuff off of there, which is good. But speaking of hacking, apparently there's some developers that are hacking iTunes accounts.
Yeah, so Apple is vulnerable, and so when the hack was made, that if you purchase a small, cheap little app, and you think it's inexpensive, this same app can then purchase other apps that are more expensive, that are made by the same developer to kind of funnel cash towards them, and also to boost their status in the iTunes marketplace.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious how this whole hack works, that apparently when somebody buys a developer's apps, they're able to get enough information about them or something, that, or they have direct access to their accounts that they can purchase other apps in place of the user?
It could be a part of the in-app purchase system that they would be able to cache the credentials of the iTunes account, and then instead of purchasing add-ons for that application, they're able to purchase full apps. At least that would be my guess.
Could be, yeah. I don't know. I'm guessing they've got to have some way, they've got to be using some kind of like a keylogger or something to figure out your password and stuff, because I know with like my iPod Touch, if I go more than a little bit without between purchases, it'll ask me to enter my password again. So I'm guessing they must have figured some way around that, or, well, I really don't know how things work with in-app purchases, but I'm guessing they probably figured some way out around that, as to where there's a whole bunch of people all over the world that are getting charged all kinds of money, between $100 and $1,400, buying all kinds of these low-cost apps from like $1 to $3 all the way up to $90-plus dollars, which in turn runs these apps all the way up to the top of the most purchased apps or whatever in the app store. So everybody else sees, oh, hey, these are popular apps, I should check them out. Then they go get them, and then, of course, they end up getting hacked.
Yeah, and so a good rule of thumb, if you have seen this on your account or if you're afraid that this might happen, to go ahead and change your iTunes password. And on the site, it says to call or email Apple. But as a person who has been a victim of erroneous iTunes purchases, seeing that I don't have an Apple product, and then someone spend over $600 in iTunes, it's better just to go straight to the credit card company and dispute those charges.
Yeah, I don't know who I'd call first. Well, with me, I don't think they can necessarily get away with this for me without me knowing it right away, just because I have my iTunes account linked to my PayPal account. So the second I purchase something or something gets purchased, I immediately get an email telling me what got purchased for how much and whatever. And even then, it usually takes like a day or so before the purchase ever hits my bank. So I've usually have enough of a notice that I can get something stopped before something bad happens, at least with iTunes.
Yeah, which is good. I wonder how hard it would be to set up something like that you did.
Yeah, in my case, you know, it's not too bad. I mean, just whenever you have a site that you do a lot of buying from, if they have an option of having a default account for who you pay with, just automatically set it as like PayPal or whatever, or if there's another service that essentially does the same thing, like a Google checkout or like whatever Amazon's payment system or Visa's payment system that we talked about, what was it, last week or whatever.
Okay.
But
So it's not something like, so you just use PayPal as an option instead of
that.
I don't know how it works with iTunes, so I didn't know that you could even do that.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's the way I have it done. That way I've got multiple emails about everything, and I make sure that everything's the way it should be. Just a nice way of keeping you from getting hacked. Although, I probably shouldn't have said that my iTunes account was connected to my PayPal account. I don't know if that was a good idea or not, but at least it's a suggestion for everybody out there that wants to try and keep an eye on stuff rather than having it maybe directly to their credit card and then not find out until their credit card statement shows up at the end of the month.
Yeah, this is huge for Apple. This is something that I'm wondering what they're going to reply officially and say, because they've touted their walled garden and they've really dissed Android's marketplace of saying that it's the Wild Wild West. But seeing as they are one of the most popular app stores, this is something that they're going to have to find a way to really, really make sure that people feel safe using it, especially since it is attached to directly to people's accounts in some cases.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to know how this happened, that it got past their walled garden and what exactly they're going to do to try and remedy the situation. And I'm also kind of curious to know how vulnerable, like, the Android marketplace is, or the BlackBerry marketplace, whatever it's called, or the Windows Mobile marketplace and whatever. Just to know, I'm just curious how vulnerable they are to this same kind of scheme, if it's possible to do with them. I know with Windows Phone 7 there won't be in-app purchases right away, so assuming that is how the hack occurred, I'm guessing that won't be a problem, or at least not right away on Windows Phone 7 devices.
Yeah. Well, the only way to prevent something like this is to have vendors submit source instead of submit binaries, which I don't think anybody would feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, I don't know. What I'm kind of wondering is, like, with the case of Google a couple of weeks ago, they yanked a bunch of apps off of people's phones that were, supposedly there was, like, some security-related issues and stuff. I'm kind of curious to know if Apple is going to be doing the same thing with people who purchase these apps, if they're going to be going in and yanking them off of people's phones and iPods and stuff, and iPads.
Well, they better. Yeah, that's something they have to do if it poses a threat. I guess they could limit it on the other end, but saying that if there's a purchase from this app, block it. But they should just probably remove all those publishers' applications from devices too.
Yeah, but I fear that if they do that, that's going to open up a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, well, it's a responsible thing to do. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of interesting things, apparently there's a new TV show just for BitTorrent that has become a huge success.
Yeah, the show is called Pioneer One, and it was distributed through Vodo, which is some sort of distribution platform that I'm not familiar with. But
yeah, Vudu is...
it was Vudu. Like Vudu? Like the...
I'm guessing that's supposed to be Vudu. Well, maybe Vudu spelled V-U-D-O. Or V-U-D-U. I can't think of how they spell their little set-top box thing now. That's basically...
It's two O's, I think. I think it's two O's.
Vudu. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to Google this to make sure before it drives me nuts.
Well, it's spelled Vodo.
V-U-D-U.
Okay.
So this is Vodo, whatever that is.
Yeah. So it's strictly over like BitTorrent and P2P networks, and I have not heard of it before this reading this article. I have it downloaded and sitting on my hard drive. Hope to check it out. But I think the plot line is that there's some sort of radiation emanating across the whole of North America, and some agents have been tasked to go out and find the source of the threat. And so they're wearing radioactive suits, and they're out there trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, this is one of those small little independent projects with just a group of a couple of guys doing it or whatever, yet it's managed to get more than 1 million downloads in 2 weeks, making it more popular than the new episodes of, like, True Blood, Family Guy, and Doctor Who that released in the same time period, which that's pretty impressive for something that's BitTorrent only that a lot of people have never heard of. Before this, I hadn't heard of it, and I plan on going to go download it after we get done tonight, just because BitTorrent and Skype don't play well. Or let me put it this way, BitTorrent and my router don't play well if I want to use anything else at the same time.
Yeah.
But
And apparently they raised $20,000 for the next three episodes, which they'll be starting, they'll be filming that starting in September.
Yeah, apparently they have an option for donations when you download the movie, or there's an option on their website or whatever, and out of the millions of downloads, they've managed to raise $20,000, which is apparently enough to get pre-production going for the next three episodes, and now they're working on writing those. They've got to cast the new characters and just figure out what kind of cameras they're going to get and everything else, which I don't know why you wouldn't use the same cameras you used before. That seems a little odd to me, unless you're wanting to do some kind of a major upgrade. But yeah, I'm kind of surprised at just how well this seems to be taking off, considering the fact that big media doesn't want to have anything to do with BitTorrent, with a couple of small exceptions. I think maybe the BBC is using BitTorrent to an extent.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be something that will legitimize BitTorrent, and also have one of those cases of why it should never be blocked, especially when we're talking about net neutrality.
Yeah, it's going to definitely turn some heads, and if these couple of guys are getting this kind of popularity with like no press or anything until this kind of came out, you know that there's going to be some big Hollywood studios that are going to be looking to hire them too.
Yeah. Yeah. If you got, crap my dad says on Twitter that gets a few followers, this is a pretty lengthy video and it gets over a million downloads. They're definitely going to garner the attention of some studio. What they also plan on doing with the money raised is to have steady episode releases, which is good. So it won't be sporadic, and it'll be a pretty good interval of once a week or once every 2 weeks or whatever that interval will be.
Yeah, apparently there's people that are already a little antsy to watch the next episode, saying, gee, it's been a week, there should have been another episode by now.
Mm-hmm. So that's good. I'm going to check it out. Hopefully it's good.
Yeah, if it's getting more downloads than True Blood, it's got to be pretty good.
Yeah.
But anyway, speaking of peer-to-peer and stuff like that, apparently the RIAA has said that they are sending over a million copyright infringement warnings per year.
Yeah. So they started back in October 2008, and from their statistics, they sent over a million notices in a year. But these are just, once again, these are warnings. These aren't actual threats of lawsuit directly. This is a warning saying, hey, we see that you're doing this suspicious behavior. And a good chunk of those warnings went through universities and colleges in the United States.
Yeah, for quite a while there were pretty much targeting almost solely universities and stuff, because with them, they know that they can get a whole lot more cooperation, especially now I can't think of the name of the act here. It's somewhere towards the bottom of the article. The Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008 finally went into effect starting this month, saying that if schools don't do anything to keep people from doing any illicit file sharing on campus, they can lose their funding.
Yeah, also it threatens the student that they could lose their opportunity for federal student loans if they're found in violation of the act too.
Yeah, and usually when they're doing stuff like this, the university has their policy for using the school's networks that you're not going to be doing stuff like this or whatever, that they make you sign at when you first start the school or at the first of a new semester or school year or whatever. And both say that if you violate that, you can get suspended or expelled or whatever. So by the RIAA sending messages there, that's going to get a whole lot more people's attention, and it's actually going to do something more as far as getting people to stop downloading, since it seems to be that, like, around colleges and stuff are the biggest areas for having a lot of illicit file sharing.
Yeah, but also, I think it's less illicit file sharing in colleges, but I think it's innovation. It's just, because, like, if you look how Facebook started, it started in a dorm room. You look at how Dell started, it started in a dorm room. Colleges are usually the hotbed of development and forward thinking. So I think this restriction specifically focusing on university networks, because in some cases this is privately held networks of the university, why should they be any different than a Comcast or a Time Warner? I think this is I understand that they feel that most of the infringements are on their networks, but if you look at the whole, even though a big chunk went to universities, was it over a quarter of a million? It's still less than the outstanding other networks, which have to be non-university.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of curious to know. I'd like to see some statistics as far as how many people change their piracy habits based on getting these warnings, especially now that they've stopped suing people, so essentially they're just sending these legal warnings, but they're not going to sue you in the end unless maybe you're like sharing like a million songs or something.
Yeah, they could be making just better pirates. People are better able to cover up their tracks.
Yeah, I know that's what I would do. If one of those warnings showed up at my door, I'd just cover my tracks better. I do what I can as it is. But there's still a number of other steps that I could take that I haven't taken, that if one of those things showed up at my door, I'd probably change things a little bit to make sure that that doesn't happen again, especially if I know that there's no real teeth behind the letters that they're sending.
Yeah, exactly. Be like, oh, time to move on to DEF CON 3 and use these other encryption schemes or masking or ghosting utilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of file sharing, apparently the UK has rejected the ACTA calls to criminalize illicit file sharing.
Yeah, they think that having a mandatory jail time for what they consider minor offenses is something that they're not willing to take.
Yeah, apparently as far as the UK is concerned, is that this should just be a framework for enforcing existing intellectual property laws, not trying to rewrite them and force them on a whole bunch of different countries.
Yeah. Most of this is in commentary to ACTA's request for more of a three strikes approach to putting people in jail if they have been found to be infringing or trading copyrighted files. And since ACTA is a secret treaty, a lot of this discussion has been going on behind closed doors, but since it's been leaked, some of this discussion has spilled out into the press.
Well, unless something has changed in the real recent negotiations, the last leaked copy that I saw, the three strikes thing had ended up getting thrown out, but in the end it seemed like it was basically trying to take the DMCA and apply it to all the other countries of the world if they can.
Yeah, but this is another blow for ACTA, as more countries find out exactly what was in the original version. Their communities and their constituents have been speaking up about what they don't want in it, and I think this is in direct correlation to that.
Yeah, it seemed like they tried to send this through as fast as they could in secret until people found out about it. And then at that point, they were, you tried to get it through even faster, and mm-hmm. the wheels just kind of ended up starting to fly off, and now it's about to end up in a total wreck. There's been a couple of stories that I have wanted to include in the show, but ended up not happening just because we already had enough stories or whatever about, like, India's issues with ACTA and everything. So it's not like the UK is the only one.
Right, and this actual pirating portion related to digital media is just a portion of the treaty. It is much larger than just this one issue, but of course this is something that we're focusing on. Hopefully this is an item that they'll let go by the wayside so that the whole thing can pass if it is beneficial for all countries. But since this Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA portion is in this, I think maybe they should just hold off on another revision and let this one go through as is. I mean, I shouldn't say as is. I mean, without that included.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that they haven't like tried to rename it from ACTA to something else to see if they could try and pass it through that way, like they're essentially doing with climate change, but that's kind of a whole nother issue, and this isn't a political show.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of surprised they aren't trying some other tactics to try and get this through. But it seems like there's enough opposition on different things here and there from different countries that I think it's going to end up all falling apart.
Yeah, and I think with how strong the UK is, I mean, they're not a minor player in this whole thing. Their opposition speaks volumes to the other countries, it's like you mentioned, like Africa, to the developing nations, how it could be overly restrictive. I think for that reason, just this one reason, this article means that that portion will not go forward about mandatory jail time.
Yeah, that'll be a good thing.
Yeah. But
speaking of copyright cases being fought out in court, apparently a judge has rejected all of the EFF's arguments in the peer-to-peer cases where that U.S. copyright group out of D.C. is trying to sue 5,000 people all at once for downloading the Hurt Locker. Or I think this one is the Hurt Locker, or if this one is Far Cry, or if this is a combination of both. But
well, it's the same. It's the same firm that represents the interests of those other items, but I don't think it ever specifies specifically which individual film or movie that was downloaded. But this could be everyone related to that, since they are representing all of them as clients. It could be one suit wrapping up all the movies and the infringers into one. But basically, the judge said that the compromise is that you guys cannot represent everybody else, just like you guys are against all these files, all these defendants being put into one case. If they have a problem with it, they have to come by one and dispute those on their own merits instead of listening to the RIAA and the EFF. I'm sorry, not the RIAA, ACLU and the EFF on their defending of these clients.
Yeah, so what I'm wondering, well, and one of the other things is that people can dispute it on the grounds of jurisdiction or whatever, because all of these are being filed in D.C. Yeah. Well, these people, I'm sure most, if not all of them, don't live in D.C.
Right, some live in Hawaii.
Yeah, they live all over the country. The act of infringement incurred where they're at, not in D.C. So, I mean, there's certainly some issues as far as jurisdiction that can be brought up, and as far as the judge is concerned, if people want to bring those up individually, they're more than welcome to do that. So that's kind of, hopefully there's be enough people that kind of fight back against it, but I'm kind of wondering if, since all the parties have to agree on the terminology and the letters that are going to be sent to people and mm-hmm. what their options are for trying to get it tossed before their names are revealed and whatever, I'm kind of curious to know if, like, the EFF and the ACLU can't essentially stonewall it and say, okay, we don't agree to your terms, we want this, which we know you'll never accept, so you're not going to budge, we're not going to budge, so nothing's going to happen.
Well, one thing is for sure is that this law firm representing the interests of these copyright holders, they are pretty good. Since they were able to get all of the EFF and the ACLU ACLU's objections nullified by the court. So I feel that if they detect that they can't get compromised, that they'll force the judge to force a compromise.
Yeah, I'm guessing they probably would, but who knows? It seems like they aren't as invested in it as they want people to think. Because I remember originally, kind of when this story started to come out, that as far as they were concerned, they didn't seem to be too interested in actually taking people to court. They're just sending them these letters saying, hey, pay us $1,500, $2,500, and we'll forget the whole matter, or otherwise we might take you to court. And as far as they're concerned, we'll just see how many idiots are going to send us a check for $2,500.
Right. And since they have to go to D.C., it might actually be cheaper to pay pay the settlement, and instead of finding a flight to D.C. or hiring a lawyer to file an appeal.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of curious to see just how this continues to play out. This is probably the one major piracy-related lawsuit that I've been paying a lot of attention to, especially now that we don't have a Jammy Thomas or anything to mm-hmm. pay attention to.
Right, and it's the one that has Time Warner backing the defendant, saying that we don't want to comply also.
Yeah, and I hear Comcast has joined up with that as well.
Oh, good.
I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything in terms of Comcast's ability to process these requests like we have for Time Warner, and that they can only process a couple dozen requests a month or whatever, because they only have, what is it, 3 people that do all the lookups and everything.
Yeah, 4, yeah.
But, yeah, apparently they've joined on to be against this as well, which you'd think the judge would see how many, all the different groups that are against this, and kind of think, gee, maybe something's not right here, especially considering this practice that this is essentially the business model for this law firm has been banned in other countries.
Yeah,
but heaven forbid we happen to have a judge around here that knows anything. But at least there are some people that might be able to go to D.C. to fight any allegations, those being the Palm employees, since HP seems to be getting rid of all of them.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of free time on their hands. And this is because during the finalization of the acquisition, which was just this past week, HP wasted no time in releasing the employees that they found redundant or just don't have a need for, since they're focusing straight only on WebOS. So so I'm guessing they're just keeping engineers, and even those engineers could be whittled off to those who are willing to play ball by HP's terms.
Yeah, basically they bought them for the technology and the patents, and as far as they're concerned, the only people they need are the people that really, really understand, like the WebOS. Everybody else can hit the road.
Right, and those people still might be getting HP employees up to speed, like those in the printer division or their tablet divisions, on how to program or how to understand the kernel itself, and then they might not be able to stay past that.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see if there's going to be what other companies are going to be picking up these employees, because, I mean, there's always been a kind of a long battle between Apple and Palm. I wonder if they're going to go over to Apple.
But Google's already snapped up some Palm employees, so that could be another haven for them.
Yeah, they could go over to Google. I'm sure Microsoft could always use a few with Windows Phone 7 coming out. But, yeah, I was kind of surprised when I heard this story. I mean, I understood that they were buying them for the patents, and that's what I thought should have been done to begin with. Still not sure HP was the right one to buy them, but I think that was certainly the right way to do it. But I'm kind of curious to know just how many employees have been laid off and just how big of an effect that's going to have on something like the HP Slate, which is supposed to be running the webOS.
Yeah, I think that's totally scrapped if you ask me. I think the processor was wrong. I know Intel said that they are actually porting Android over to x86 mm-hmm. so that Atom processors can run Android. And so I feel that if we're talking about the original hardware of the Slate, that could be something that they might do. But I think they're going to probably focus on ARM-based processors for a new tablet for HP.
Yeah, I saw a story this morning that was talking a little bit about Android 3.0 that I think is supposed to be out in like October or something like that. I don't remember the name of the code name for it. I think it's like Gingerbread or something like that, but it's supposed to support a much higher resolution for tablets and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be too surprised to see if the Slate turn into an Android device instead. But at the same time, I don't know if Microsoft would let that happen, considering they showed it off at CES as a Windows device. And to see that turn over and become an Android device, I don't think Ballmer would be too terribly happy over that.
Yeah. Well, the one thing is clear is that by the beginning of next year, we're going to have a lot of choices. From HP, from LG, from Samsung, from all these companies coming out with Slates.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see just what all these other companies are going to do in terms of an OS, because I think the iPad is good with the OS that it has, but every time you try and throw a full-blown version of Windows on a pad, it never works out well. So I'm kind of curious to see just what way they go, if they go Android or they come up with their own OS or just how that's going to end up playing out. I think that's going to be the most interesting part of it.
Yeah. Good thing is there'll be plenty of competition, so prices should be pretty competitive with all these platforms.
I hope so. I saw the... Oh, now I can't think of who's making it. That's supposed to be the dual screen tablet computer, basically kind of like the Courier was supposed to be.
I think that's Toshiba.
Yeah, Toshiba. And that's supposed to be $1,100 when it comes out, and I think they said January. So yeah, I certainly wouldn't call that a cheap price at all.
Right, but that's something that could fail, and which could say, hey, next time we come out with a product, we cannot hit that price point. We need to get something a lot lower.
Yeah, and that seemed to be running the full-blown version of Windows 7. It even had the Chrome browser on there, so I've got a feeling that that's probably not going to do too well, but hopefully they can prove me wrong. But
yeah.
Regardless, you should be able to watch Hulu on it, or at least Plus.
Yeah, talk about something that's a little too expensive for its price point. I think Hulu Plus is a little pricey at $10 a month.
Yeah, I would say so. I could see maybe like $50 a year or something like that, but $10 a month seems to be a bit much in my mind. Especially when you're not actually owning any content. This is just to have the ability to stream content.
And you're still getting ads. Yeah, exactly. I'm glad to see that they're expanding out to other devices, because this is something that they had to do. They have to make it portable in order for people to be able to take advantage of Hulu Plus, to feel that they're getting their money's worth. But they're only seem to be unlocking old content, meaning that there would be additional series and back catalogs of shows. But there aren't going to be any Hulu Plus premium channels that are only available for Hulu Plus users, as in the names of the content. Like for instance, there won't be any HBO shows or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem like a very good value to me. I mean, being able to watch Hulu on all kinds of different platforms is nice, but at the same time, Hulu Plus only gets you like a list of shows in terms of like the full seasons and stuff. It only gets you like 118 full seasons. And a lot of them, it's like all 9 seasons of The X-Files or all 6 seasons of The Office or whatever. So you're essentially only going to get maybe, 20 shows or something like that that are going to have like their full series available.
Yeah, in order for something to be this to be actually really successful, I think they need to release the APIs for Hulu Plus. They need to allow it to be integrated in anything and everything, so regular developers can say, "Hey, I'm going to add Hulu into my application." Mm-hmm. But also a big sticking point for me is that they still don't have CBS shows and they don't have all the other networks, so it's not a one-stop shop. But it is a good proposition. I think this is a step forward. Just like how Netflix doesn't have every movie for streaming, I think increasing in popularity is something that gives a good momentum for them to build upon what they currently have and make it something extremely viable in the future.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised at all the different platforms that it's actually coming to. It's coming to, what is it? Samsung, internet-connected TVs, Blu-ray players, iPad, iPhone, or the iPhone 4, the 3GS, third-generation iPod Touch, the PlayStation 3, which I'm still kind of irritated with that.
Right.
Well, the thing is, they're saying, well, in the coming weeks or whatever, it'll start working on the PlayStation 3. It worked on the PlayStation 3 to begin with. It's just one night out of the blue, they decided, okay, that's enough. We're turning that off.
Yeah. And then I think you have to sign up for the PlayStation Network Plus, right?
Yeah, I think you do, which that's $50 a year. And it's also, and I hate to admit that I'm wrong, but it's also coming to the Xbox 360, which, from the sounds of it, it's going to be coming the same time as Natal launches. And with that, I'm sure you're going to have the Xbox Live Gold membership. So that's the $50 a year on top of the $10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as I'm concerned, it's not something that I will be getting. And not just because they proved me wrong about being on the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Although that does irritate me.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, seeing how they are staying with set-top boxes, I haven't seen Roku listed. That would be something that will also give a great value for the current Netflix boxes that are currently out there to help unify this. Boxy's not listed, which is, I know that they really, really wanted, had Hulu on their platform before they restricted and blocked them. So these are still some holes in their rollout strategy. Hopefully, as they partner up with more people, we'll hear more and more announcements.
Well, last I had heard, it was working on Boxy. It's not that it was officially supposed to work on Boxy, but last
with
I
the workaround.
Yeah, I think there's some kind of a workaround that you can still get it working on Boxy.
Yeah, but officially though, I'm saying I'm surprised that that's one. Just like the PlayStation Network, that's something that did work before, but they actively try to block it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is gonna be interesting. I'm kind of curious to see how many people actually subscribe to it. I've got a feeling that unless they start getting even more shows than just like 118 seasons or whatever, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of people actually subscribing to it.
Right.
But anyway, speaking of
18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently Blockbuster stock is now at 18 cents. And yeah. Since it's been under a dollar for more than 30 days, it is being delisted on the from the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, since they have problems getting subscribers and members, their stock price has taken a dramatic plunge. And what they wanted to do is do a reverse stock split, in which they'll say one share is now equal to a third of a share, and kind of combine their money. Well, it's going to have to be more than that if it's 18 cents. But they couldn't even get enough votes. People will show up. They had people vote yes for the matter, but they couldn't get quorum. So they have problems motivating even their own shareholders to save them from being delisted from the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, this is the only reason I really chose this story, because it's kind of a little bit of a lightweight story. This was about the only article I really saw on it. But the only reason I really chose this was just because I like being able to say I told you so. And my prediction is still on track for Blockbuster being dead by the end of the year.
Yeah. They're in a desperate situation. It seems like their management just doesn't get it. And it looks like they're not getting it. They're way too protective, and people... And they try to, at least in some markets, copy, I think, Redbox even, and they try to copy Netflix. But their strategy just seems too desperate and non-cohesive to be successful. So I expect to see some people fired over this, and a new announcement saying we're going a new direction. That's the only way that I see them surviving for the rest of the year.
Yeah, they've already closed 1,000 brick-and-mortar stores. And I'm sure there'll be more coming. They're still losing money even after they've closed all those stores. And it just seems to me, I think they kind of went wrong when they pretty much killed their marketing efforts to an extent. I mean, it used to be especially back in the 90s, everyone used to talk about what they're going to do for their Blockbuster night, where they go to Blockbuster, rent a couple movies, come home with a bowl of popcorn too, and it was just kind of everybody referred to movie rental night as like a Blockbuster night.
Yep.
And after Blockbuster kind of dropped the whole campaign, they just kind of faded from public consciousness, and they never did anything after that to try and replace that momentum. And in the meantime, you get other companies like a Hollywood Video, which I think they're now out of business, or they're in the process of closing down or whatever. And then eventually Netflix, they come in and with a better business model, steal away a bunch of the business. And by that point, Blockbuster doesn't have a clue what to do. They're committed to this old business model, yet they're not doing anything around it to try to help it or save themselves or anything. And in the end, that's what has killed the company.
Yeah. If Blockbuster came out with a streaming-only service, which you still can't get from Netflix, and have it reasonably priced, so $8.99 right underneath Hulu, I think that is something that's compelling that I would look into, even dropping Netflix, because I'll get rid of the DVDs and go straight for streaming. But the thing is, the Netflix has is integration in other devices, like the Xbox and the Wii and all these other platforms that they don't have yet because they haven't been vigilant about it.
Yeah, the only possible move that they could make, and at this point I don't think they've got the time or the money to do it, would be to go straight streaming, negotiate whole new contracts with all the movie studios as to where you're getting brand new movies as soon as they come out, none of this 28 days later to help DVD sales or whatever. You have to come up with some good deal that the movie studios are going to like, as to where they're going to give you brand new big blockbuster films for streaming as soon as they come out, something that Netflix can't offer at this point, and give and put your and say that you've that because of that you have a greater value than Netflix. That's pretty much the only real thing that could possibly save them, but I don't think that they have the time or the money to do it anymore.
Right. Or the intellectual thinking outside the box know-how to do it either.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think they've got enough clout anymore with the movie industry to be able to negotiate those kind of deals like Netflix might.
Yeah, it all depends. It may be less to help not Blockbuster and more to hurt Netflix. We never know.
Yeah, could be. Who knows? But then again, it seems like the movie studios are starting to like Netflix a little bit more now that they're willing to delay DVD rentals for 28 days to help DVD sales. Right. So, who knows? But anyway, I just wanted to point out that my prediction is on track for the death of Blockbuster by the end of the year.
Yes.
Which, if so, it's anything like Circuit City, what was it? I don't even think it was a month before they declared bankruptcy after they got delisted from the stock market, wasn't it?
Right. And
I think it was like 2 weeks.
Another sign that Blockbuster has the wrong management on top. They were actually negotiating to buy Circuit City.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, which that never made any sense to me. They were negotiating to buy them for $1 billion, which where they'd even come up with $1 billion, I don't have a clue.
Right. At the same time, they're closing their own stores and they're trying to purchase another brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's like the dying trying to save the dying.
But, well,